This Thanksgiving Local Talk program is dedicated to the memory of the late Janet Claus and Paul Nelson, who were honored during this recorded show in 2019.
Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thank you for listening in. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hi, Paul. This is our Thanksgiving special program.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving to you and all of you out there, too.
And we decided that the best way to celebrate Thanksgiving was to tell our favorite stories. And we have two of our favorite storytellers with us. Paul, could you introduce them?
Well, I'd be glad to, Susan. We have Dan Bagley and Patricia Rose Bellard Coffey here in our studio. And they are storytellers. And, you know, any holiday brings up all kinds of stories, not only in our own background, but all the stories we've heard and listened to over the years on the radio and on TV, and all the fabulous Hallmark movies. So storytelling really fits in with Thanksgiving.
Before we start with the stories, I'd like to give thanks for the storytellers who are with us today. These are people who live right here in central Iowa and who generously drove over to be with us in our studio to tell stories of the season that are really about central Iowa. Dan Bagley came from Nevada, and Pat Coffey drove 2 hours from Waverly. But they've traveled a lot farther than that to tell stories at regional and national storytelling festivals all over the country. And Pat was even part of a storytelling delegation that went to China. Their stories are about their own experiences on farms in central Iowa. Paul can share those memories, but I realize that these are not everyone's shared memories of Thanksgiving. So we'll be interspersing other songs with stories in them throughout the program, just to remind us that not everyone can feast on the foods or have the same kinds of families that fit into a Norman Rockwell painting. We've been reminded over and over that this is a year to bring people together. So we'll start right here at KHOI. Stay tuned.
And Dan, I'm going to go to you first. Do you have a story for us today?
Well, as a matter of fact, yes, I do. First off, thank you, Susan and Paul, for inviting us up. And now it's that time of the year, Thanksgiving. It's a time to share our past blessings, experiences, and hopefully some other things. Now, as I look back on some of these experiences, I'm drawn to the iconic Norman Rockwell's painting of Freedom from Want. You know, it's such a scene, Grandpa and Grandma serving this magnificent turkey, and they've prepared and slaved all day. And everybody within the family has their place at the table. As the turkey is brought out as an offering, if you will, it's marvelous. And so Grandpa, he decides to open the box that has the carving knife and fork and takes it out. And as he begins to carve, it's beautiful. And the family is just sitting there, and you can imagine what they're thinking. Now, that's the vision that Norman Rockwell had.
I love that painting, yes.
Yes, it's a marvelous painting. Well, such a scene didn't happen in our house very often, as a matter of fact, because in my experience, the famous Murphy's Law often came. And the family would gather and this one scene came to my mind.
Murphy's Law is whatever can go wrong will go wrong.
Indeed it will, and usually it does. Now, at our family, my daughter wanted to be ready for Thanksgiving. She wanted it to be special because her boyfriend was coming to the dinner. And she was preparing. Now, she had the reins of control, and she was allowed to be in charge. Now, she had on her apron, and everything was perfect. And it's sort of like we're all prepared for, like, Spencer Tracy and Audrey Hepburn in the movie Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Yeah.
Andrew. Yeah. Well, Andrew, we've met him, but he'd never been together with such a group. And so we were prepared. Now, Heather, she wanted to make sure everything was perfect. Well, my job was to help prepare this hapless bird. Now, it was in the sink, and it was covered in cold water, and we flushed the water through it, and it was kind of opaque laying there, and I felt kind of bad for him in a way. I mean, he did sacrifice his life, and so we had to show a tad bit of reverence for this bird. So this is the big turkey, and as I pick it up and I hand it to Heather, she would assume and direct the experience from then on. I silently said to Mr. or Mrs. Turkey, whatever it was, "It is well. We'll take care of you." Indeed, we did. It was into the oven for its journey to our table. The preparation for this feast began in earnest, as several plates were brought from the cabinets, once again to signify a special meal was beginning. The china cabinets revealed their treasures, Grandma's big turkey platter, all the little silver servings, the glass serving dishes, cups, saucers, napkins, cloth napkins, no less, with the rings on them. Grandpa's platters emerged again and again, reminding us all of her spirit was now among us. Aunt Cheryl, who is a cardiac ER nurse, really a perfect person, was tasked with making her famous mashed potatoes. Now, only Cheryl's potatoes can come out so perfect. They had butter, and it was salted lightly. And just at the point of perfection, she thought, it's time to plop them down in the bowl. And as she did so, they plopped right out of the bowl and went straight to the ceiling. And now my son, who was supposed to be reverent, couldn't be. He just started to laugh and laugh and laugh. And the air almost was sucked out of the room when those potatoes came flying out of the bowl. But you could hear my son just laughing. Murphy's Law again had made its appearance. Well, my son, who was free about that, just thought over and over how funny that was. Well, the tension broke, and forever after, we looked forward to Aunt Cheryl's sealing potatoes. Then a new wrinkle happened. Heather and Mom started running around, yelling, "The stove quit! The stove quit!" Uh-oh. What are we going to do? I'm like, dun-da-da-da! I don't know what to do. I can't fix the stupid stove. Well, Mom, a.k.a. Supermom, she knew just what to do. So she scooped up that half-baked bird and brought it to her neighbor's house. She had been babysitting at the neighbor's house, so here was the oven. So she put the bird in the oven, and away we went. She was doing all of the things she needed to do, and it worked well, and the turkey was finished. Indeed, again, the clouds opened and tears were averted. And it was almost as if the angels could be heard singing. The magnificent bird was on Grandma's plate. It was ready. I assumed the patriarchal role and began to carve and shred this beautiful offering, as I had used a serrated knife, which was meant for bread. But it worked. As I was cutting, I noticed a foreign debris in the platter, but after being married, I learned silence sometimes is best. Never question before thinking. Well, the meal was glorious and sumptuous, and we cleared the table. Kathy confided to me that she had dropped the turkey and it bounced into the bushes, collected some pine needles, dirt, and leaves, but she's a trooper, and she knew just what to do. Just wipe it off and do the best you can. Now, I know what that debris was. Well, we didn't tell Heather until years later. It was never mentioned again. Nobody knew, nobody died, or got sick. Ignorance is bliss. I remember Molly, our beautiful Sheltie, had been shampooed and brushed and blown dried and was spectacular in her canine beauty for the special holiday, because she, too, was able to get a few pieces of turkey. But we wanted to bring her in, and I realized she was still out in the garage. Oh, so I went over to get the door open, and here she was, looking weak and troubled and full of turkey fat, grease, and drippings from our roaster. We forgot it, left it out there to cool. She found it and looked at it. She said, "I ate the whole thing, and it's all your fault for leaving it there for me." Face was plastered in clumps, and her mane was spiked of fat. She tried to lick it off everywhere, just spreading the goo. Dawn dish soap worked on her in the tub after several rinses. She was blown dry and really had a pleasant smell of springtime turkey fat. Of course, there was stuff inside this dog, and she let us know by rumblings and smells. The various sounds from that little dog were frightening. after the cleanup of the dog, table and things put away, so to clean the table enough to eat some pie and ice cream. We started to share stories from past gatherings and laughed, and as the stories began to wane, I heard a noise coming from under the table. Molly had gone to her special place to rest, and so I moved the tablecloth and patted her and said, "Good girl, long day for you too, wasn't it?" And those brown eyes looked up at me, and a rumble started, and suddenly, there she blows! Every orifice on that dog erupted. Oh, well, Thanksgiving thoughts went to giving thanks, for this Thanksgiving was over. By the way, Heather and Andrew are still together.
That's great.
Our listeners have had several opportunities to hear some of the stories from Dan Bagley, but Pat Coffey is new to our audience, and so would you like to introduce yourself a little before the story? Or
sure, I can do that. I was born interested and Iowan in 1940 in Des Moines. I knew Des Moines before it had a freeway. And my dad's family settled in Fairview, which became Story City. They were there before 1855. My mom's family settled south of Des Moines. They're one of the first 400 families in what became Des Moines. And I have been talking about all of them ever since.
So that's really the theme of many of your stories. There's a strong historical. By the way, if you just joined us, we have two storytellers on today, Dan Bagley and Pat Coffey. And it's Storytelling Day here, pre-Thanksgiving on KHOI. And Pat, have you got a story for us?
I do have. I was 15 when my dad moved us from Des Moines out to 40 acres near Altoona. He thought his kids would be better as adults if they did a little of that just plain hard work that he learned on the old home place in Story City. I think he was probably right. I am the second of the seven of us. And I knew enough already that I was a girl. I was going to have to learn to make gravy. It was a coming of age thing. And I knew that no matter how good your gravy was, it wouldn't be as good as your mother's until she was dead. And I also knew, no matter how good your gravy was, it would not be as good as your future mother-in-law's even when she was dead. But you had to learn. Otherwise, you were just a little kid. So we moved out to that 40 acres. Now, our house in town had a kitchen so large that when the nine of us sat down to a meal around that big formica table, if you wanted something else from the counter or the stove or the cupboard or the refrigerator, you had to get up and walk over there. Out on the 40, it was a small house. Same table, same nine people. Now, if you wanted something from the stove or the cupboard or the counter, you just reached over and picked it up. And if you wanted something from the refrigerator, two people would have to move so you could open the door. Another problem between the two was we had city water in Des Moines, but out on the farm we had contaminated water from a shallow well. Now, it did flush the toilet, and we knew enough to be grateful. But you couldn't drink it or use it in cooking. So we hauled drinking water for nine people from Des Moines. We used the big old 5-gallon milk cans. And my mother usually went into town to get the water, and she'd go to her mom and dad's because they were sympathetic. So she might be gone for a while. Well, this was a Sunday at noon. Dad and two of my little brothers were out baling hay. I was supposed to get dinner on the table. I had three freshly butchered chickens from Saturday. I got them cut up, put them in those cast iron skillets, you know, with about an inch of Crisco. Had two of those going. Peeled the potatoes, put those in the pressure pan. Had sliced tomatoes, I had sweet corn from the garden. I had everything ready, except I didn't know how to make the gravy. And Mom had gone into town to get water, and she wasn't back yet. Now, I knew my dad could tell time by where the sun was. And I knew he was wondering why I hadn't called him in for dinner. So, finally, I went out to the edge of the field and I waved at him. He pulled up beside me and kicked that baler out of gear. Now, my brothers were grateful, because that old baler, you had to sit up by the chute, one on either side, and feed the wires through one at a time, push that block up. It was awful work. You'd get the chaff and the dust and parts of field mice and snakes. Yeah. It was a terrible job, and they'd be sweaty, so pretty soon it was like being in a concrete mask, and I knew they were glad to see me. Dad kicked the baler out of gear, didn't shut the tractor off, and said, "What do you need?" I said, "Daddy, I got the three chickens fried. I got the potatoes smashed. I got the green beans. I got the sliced tomatoes. I got the sweet corn. Daddy, I have dinner ready, but Daddy, I don't know how to make gravy, and Mom isn't back yet." He fiddled around with that tractor. It was a John Deere B. They called it the Johnny Popper. It would slow way down till it was just humming, and then it'd pop about every 60 seconds, so you knew it was still running. And he leaned down and he said, "I don't care if you know how to make gravy or not. We're going to finish this pass on the field and come in for dinner. You will have gravy on the table." He said, "Okay." Headed back for the house. Along the way, I thought, you know, it has something to do with the grease you fried the meat in. I got two skillets full of that. And flour. I'm pretty sure it has flour in it. I know where the flour is. I made gravy. Mom came back. Nine people cleaned up and sat down to dinner. Nine people ate my gravy on their mashed potatoes. Nine people cleaned their plates. Not one person complained. But about 3 years later, one of my brothers said, "It's taken this long to be able to eat your gravy without using a knife and a fork." And that's how I learned to make gravy.
You know, I find myself in the same world as I was back when we were listening to radio before we had TV. Here I am hearing your stories, and I'm doodling, and my mind is following your stories. And I remember the old days when I listened to The Shadow and Mercury Theater. And I'm being thoroughly entertained today by your stories.
I'm glad that you mentioned those old radio shows, Paul, because it gives me a chance to mention that our fall membership drive is still going. Radio has changed a lot since The Shadow. Farm families no longer sit around the dinner table at noon listening for the farm report and the weather with Elwin Taylor. And incidentally, Elwin Taylor has been on KHOI from time to time since we started. He told me, though, that he'd stop if nobody called in. And nobody did. So that's what can happen to radio if people don't care enough to keep it going. So call in now at 515-292-2878 or text us at 515-200-7758 to donate so we can keep broadcasting the wide variety of programs 24/7, 365 days a year that we do now. Only here at KHOI can you hear so many different people, stories, and events of Central Iowa the way we are doing now, sitting around the table in our studio with our guests, Don Bagley of Nevada, and Pat Coffey of Waverly. Isn't that a good reason to join us as members of KHOI? If you are already a member, please consider becoming a sustaining member at $20 a month or more. It's your subscription to awareness of what's happening around you and where we've come from.
And Pat, Do you have another story for us?
What I love about telling this gravy story is that afterwards, people come and talk to me about their lives and their stories.
Yes.
I've had conversations about John Deere B tractors, conversations about that miserable, rotten old baler.
Oh, yeah.
And conversations about other people's Thanksgivings. And I ask them if I can share theirs. And I'd like to share two with you that really Thanksgiving. Terry is a storyteller, and she lives way up north in Minnesota, where the winter comes early and gray and stays a long time. Terry's mother had multiple sclerosis and seasonal affective disorder. That means when the gray sky closes in, you become severely depressed. And periodically, Terry's mom would have to go into the hospital. She'd just be so incapacitated. And Terry said, I was trying to get everything ready for Thanksgiving. I had the company come into my house, and mom was in the hospital again. It was 3 days before Thanksgiving. I went up to see her, and she said, you know, I feel so bad this time. I don't think I'm going to ever make it out again. And Terry said, I was just so impatient, I stomped my foot and said, don't be ridiculous, Mom. Thanksgiving is in 3 days, and no one else knows how to make that gravy. Her mother rallied. She came home. She made the gravy.
You know,
that's how important gravy is.
And so that means gravy can bring you back from the brink. Right?
There you go. There you go.
Who knew that gravy had so much power?
It does in my family.
But, you know, gravy is my thing. My favorite thing is hot beef sandwiches. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
And in the summer, I used to work for the DOT, which was called the Highway Commission. It was the early 60s, and we were on a soils crew doing studies of what the land lay of the land was, you know, subterranean, so they could build Interstate 80 and 35. Well, that identifies me as being as old as dirt. But we would travel the state and stay in mom-and-pop hotels. There were four men on the crew. And every time I went to a restaurant, I sampled the hot beef sandwich. And I knew the best hot beef sandwiches in Iowa.
Yes.
And I made a list. I should have really, you know, done something with that commercially. But in those days, in all the small towns, there was a woman in a print dress who made everything homemade.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was great food. And the highlight was always the gravy.
Yes.
There's the dark brown gravy and the light brown gravy. And
there were secret recipes and secret techniques and everything. You had to, it really was a coming of age thing when the women let you hang out and learn all these things.
Well, I found out that not everyone can do gravy.
No.
No. It's kind of an art form.
I'm so glad to hear you talking about roast beef and gravy. Because at the beginning of the program, I promised some diversity, and this is the perfect lead-in to Louis Armstrong and Velma Middleton singing All That Meat and No Potatoes.
Hey, Pops, what's wrong, Daddy? You look like something's bothering you.
Doesn't bother me, honey, that a piece of roast beef can't fix up.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Pops. A man works hard, then comes on home. Expects to find stew with that fine ham bone. He opens the door, then starts to look in.
Say, woman, what's this stuff you cooking? Now that meat and no potatoes, I just sing right like a green tomato.
Here I'm waiting, palpitating with all that meat
and no potatoes.
All that meat and no potatoes. All that food to the alligators.
Now hold me steady, I'm really ready. Now all that meat and no potatoes.
I don't think that peas are bad. With me, most anything goes.
Yes, I looked in the pot. I'm fit to fight. Because, woman, you know that mess just ain't right.
Oh, that's all.
Oh, all that meat and no potatoes just ain't right, like green tomatoes.
Woman, I'm steaming, yeah, really screaming. All that meat and no potatoes.
This is KHOI Community Radio with your hosts Susan Franzen and Paul Wearson, hosting storytellers Dan Bagley and Patty Coffey, telling us Thanksgiving stories, particularly stories about Thanksgiving foods. Contributing to that, we've just heard All That Meat and No Potatoes, sung by Louis Armstrong and Velma Middleton. And now, back to Pat with more gravy stories, because you know you can't have roast beef and potatoes without gravy.
After I told the gravy stories down in Florida for my brother and his wife, who are Red Cross workers, I told it at their annual party. A woman came up to me afterwards and she said, "Can I tell you my gravy story?" She said, "I'm not sure it's a gravy story, but can I tell you?"
Okay.
I said, "You bet." So she said, "Well, I'm from a large family, and we have that great big Thanksgiving dinner, and I was seated, and then my little niece was next to me, and my brother, her dad, was on the other side. And when it came to be time to start passing things, he had the mashed potatoes, and the gravy was right there. It was a great big crock right in front of me. And so I was supposed to pass it so it would follow the potatoes. I picked it up with both hands, and that's when I realized it was burning hot, and I couldn't hold on to it, and I dropped it. It hit the plate for my niece and tipped over and spilled right into her lap.
Oh.
My brother didn't waste a second. He snatched her up, burst out the front door, threw her face down in a snowbank. She was not burned. She was probably as scared as I was, and she said everyone tried to make both of us feel better. And the next year at Thanksgiving, we had little gravy boats in several places on the table to hold the gravy.
Live and learn.
Yes, and she said, all seemed to be well, but my niece won't sit by me anymore.
Understandably.
Great.
Oh, yeah. Well, man, how about a story from you? Any more things you're thinking of today as the holiday approaches?
Well, I am thinking about how turkey is such a great universal food. I remember when I was in Europe, I had what was called Trotzanschnitzel, which was turkey schnitzel. And it was wonderful.
Turkey schnitzel.
And it was just amazing. And it had gravy on it, too.
Gravy.
And that reminds me of Pat's story about gravy. Gravy is such a marvelous ingredient. I mean, who can do a chicken fried steak without gravy? Or toast without gravy. Yeah. Didn't we, when we were kids, we had Welsh rabbit. That was a big thing out east. You had like a white gravy on toast.
Really?
And it was really quite good.
Wow.
There's other forms of gravy, too, that are mixed with things. But gravy is such a good thing. I know that coming to Iowa, I thought Iowa's all about corn and beans. And then I went to the Iowa State Fair. Oh, the recipes calling for turkey. The turkey drumsticks. And I was always embarrassed to carry that around without a plate, a knife, and a fork. Then the first time I tried it, I was no longer embarrassed. It was a slice of heaven. I thought I was in heaven, but no, I was here in Iowa. You know? But the thing that is wonderful about drumsticks brought me back to when I was a kid. My dad would be standing there and, "Does anybody want a drumstick?" And I'd raise my hand and say, "I always got a drumstick." And it was crispy, it was good, and it had the dark meat in it. And then it'd say, "Does anybody want the dark meat?" And it was like, "Well, everybody wanted white meat." I love dark meat. It's moist and flavorful. You know, and it's just, it's grand. And then you come to Iowa, and they have those drumsticks, and it's great. Thanksgiving at my house, my daughter usually makes me a special little pile of stuffing with no onion, and I can ladle gravy on that.
Wow.
And they always reserve a drumstick or two for me. And I usually eat the dark meat. So it's ever-evolving. Thanksgiving is a time for giving thanks, and I'm so glad that turkey's pretty handy, but I also like pork, lots of pork. Now, do you remember before spiral cut?
Oh, yes.
I didn't even know what spiral cut meant until probably 5 years ago, and it's still it's alien to me. I like cutting it right off the bone.
Well, the main thing is that Thanksgiving is about meat.
Yes.
You know, it's really about meat as the main entree, gravy, stuffing, mm-hmm. all the things that really are aligned with the whole idea of having a turkey. And what I really like is cranberry. Turkey, you know, you have to have cranberry and that sort of thing. And you have to have, green stuff. What is it?
Green bean casserole.
Green bean casserole, yes. Thank you, Susan. Green bean casserole. And, you know, these things are just part of the Thanksgiving tradition in so many homes. For years up in Story City, we did a Thanksgiving dinner sponsored by Kiwanis and several organizations. And it was just a free dinner that people could come and eat, no questions asked, no provable need. It was really designed for anyone in the community to come. And we had volunteers making all the turkey, making all the trimmings. And a lot of our clients or people who came to eat the turkey and turkey dinners were women in Story City who their family was far spread. And they would probably visit them at Christmas. But a lot of these women were alone on Thanksgiving Day. And so a lot of them needed a place to go. And it evolved even further to where they'd invite family to Story City and buy a table, you know. They didn't have to contribute anything. You didn't have to bring any money with you. They did that as a courtesy. And so sometimes we actually served a family Thanksgiving dinner right there in a church or facility. Mm-hmm. And it was marvelously rewarding. And I always thought when we presented the idea that we wouldn't have enough volunteers on the holiday. You know, it's Thanksgiving. It got so eventually, and this is where we quit doing it, our volunteers outnumbered our clients who came in. And so it was a community Thanksgiving dinner. And it turned out that we had more people, Boy Scouts and church groups. And I really underestimated the willingness for people to come out on a holiday. And they did that in addition to their own celebration. You know, it was heartwarming to see them turn out. And when they outnumbered the folks coming in, we finally discontinued it. I really was surprised and amazed and gratified that we had all these people coming in to serve. And we had a little ceremony. The Boy Scouts had a flag raising and maybe a prayer, you know. And then everyone just feasted. We did that for several years, but, you know, I'll never forget that and how successful it was and really how surprising it was that people would come out to share and volunteer on what is really a family holiday in addition to their family. I'll never forget that, how people came out in Story City, Iowa, and I think they have one here in Ames, too.
Oh, yes, and they already have enough volunteers. It's already a cutoff for volunteers. No, nobody else can volunteer.
Now, isn't that strange? We have to limit our volunteers.
Most of our stories today center on food. So I'd like to feature a song with a different menu. This is a hip-hop song by Pastor Shirley Caesar, answering the question, Grandma, what are you cooking for Thanksgiving dinner? The answer is greens, beans, potatoes, tomatoes. I don't think we've ever played hip-hop on Local Talk, but if you're interested in hearing more, I think you'll find it on Saturday night with Merle on the Move at 9 p.m. So here's a sample of a hip-hop Thanksgiving with Grandma.
Well, look at here! Look! I got beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, ram, pork, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, chicken, turkeys, rat.
You name
beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, ram, pork, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, chicken, turkeys, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, ram, pork, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, chicken, turkeys, rat.
You name
beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, beans, greens, potatoes, greens. Beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, chicken, turkey. Beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, chicken, turkey.
You name it! You name it! You name it! You name it!
After that, there's only one kind of gravy story we can tell. And that's the one about celebration gravy.
I had a young man come up to me and ask if he could tell me his gravy story. And it turned into celebration gravy because when his wife had their fourth child, the children were 3, 2, 1, and new baby. And the doctor said, I'm going to want to keep him here. There's nothing wrong. Baby's healthy. Mom is fine. But I'm just going to keep him in the hospital for another couple of days. And this young man said, I didn't know why that would be. She got right up and came home with the other three. But if he said, stay here for a couple of days, okay. And my wife said to me, now, my mom and dad will probably keep the kids for the next 2 days. So you don't have to worry about that. And I got two pork chops out to thaw this morning. Just go home and throw those away, and I suppose Mom and Dad feed you, too. He said, I thought, I am the daddy. I can take care of my family. So he went by and picked three kids up, took them home. Got those two pork chops, fried them up. Made some mashed potatoes, some green beans, because everybody likes green beans. Put the babies to work setting the table. They were going to make it look pretty like Mama would. Now, the littlest one was just a toddler, and he walked around banging a spoon on his plate. But that's okay. He was happy. And the two-year-old, she arranged things and rearranged things on the table, and the three-year-old came over to supervise Dad. And when Dad thought he had the gravy all made, because, you know, you make milk gravy with pork chops, had this pretty white gravy all fixed up, and he picked her up and let her look in the pan, and she said, uh-uh, Daddy, that's not how Mama does it. He said, how does Mama do it? She said, well, Mama has this little squeeze bottle, and she puts little drops in it. He said, I can do that. So he set her on the edge of the counter, and she walked around opening and closing doors until she got to that funny little cupboard right in the corner, and she opened that one up, and she found the little bottles with the drip top, and she picked one up, and she said, it's a bottle like this, Daddy. And he said, I'm the daddy. I don't do little drip drops. I just popped the top off and dumped it in. It was the red food coloring. Now the children were thrilled and delighted. Mama had never made gravy this exciting. Everybody had red gravy and loved it. And he said, ever after, when we have something to really celebrate, we have bright red celebration gravy.
Wow.
That's great.
I think if you talk about Thanksgiving and Christmas, the holiday season, it just conjures up all kinds of memories that go together to make in some who we are. Isn't it, Dan?
When Susan asked that question, my mind quickly went on to all the adventures I've been on and all of the experiences, some good, some bad, but they all caused me to look at my life in retrospect. Right. They all meant something, you know, and if I was smart enough to be quiet long enough mm-hmm. and incorporate some of those changes into my life, I now look back and can see how valuable those lessons were. The people I choose to be with, and many times their feeling of love and acceptance is just so empowering. like most of my friends are storytellers now, right. You know. And it's just a delight because I'm sure I'm speaking for Pat as well. Wherever we go in the United States, we know people. Right. It's so cool.
And don't you think that storytellers are good listeners? Pat, look at all the stories you've collected on gravy, let alone other things.
To listen back. You know, what I like about the storytelling I do is that people don't come and talk to me about my family. They come and talk to me about theirs. Right. Wow. And I like that. Now, I had to help my two sons be a little more thankful for the food they were given. They were mine from the time they were 6 and 10. I took them back to graduate school. I needed that piece of paper that would say, yes, you do have to pay me enough to feed my children.
Yeah.
Then we got the house and we moved to Waverly. So I'm working as director of the library. I'm working long hours. I'm getting them to school and back. I'm doing all this stuff. And I don't even sit down when I get home until I've got a meal on the table. And a meal on the table is meat, potatoes, and gravy. So I get the meal on the table, and they say, we had this for lunch. Or they served chicken lumps today. I was hoping supper would be better. Or couldn't I just eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? And so finally one night I said, that's it. That's all. I've had it. And I said to the then 12-year-old, from now on, Tuesday nights are yours. You figure out what we're going to eat. You tell me what you need. I'll have it in the house. You fix supper and get it on the table. And I said to that 8-year-old, Thursday nights are yours.
Wow.
We had spaghetti every Tuesday night for the next 12 years if Dan was home. But it was awfully good, yeah. Spaghetti. But that 8-year-old would read a recipe. He would make from scratch yeast rising cinnamon rolls, baked lasagna, wonderful things. And after that had gone on for a little while, if anyone asked what was for supper, no matter what you said, the answer was, oh, that'll be good.
Oh, yes. You know, I think that's great that you incorporated them into food preparation. When they understood the challenges and what's necessary to make a meal, you appreciate that, you know. Yeah. And I think that that's true of all of us who started out after college and you had your bachelor apartment. And I had to learn a lot of things about what you shouldn't do. Mostly it was stuff that I shouldn't do because I it was trial and error, and the error always ended in smoke or some horrible thing in the apartment. But I did get pretty good at certain things, you know, and I pride myself in that because we were so dependent on Mom for food and food prep. Now, many couples I know today, the husband does the majority of the cooking. I could name several couples where the husband does virtually all the cooking.
Wow.
So there's been a real role reversal here in some ways.
Well, I figure my dad taught me more than how to make gravy that day. He taught me I didn't have to stand around waiting for someone to tell me how to do everything. I could pay attention and figure things out.
Yeah.
My mother said it a little differently. She said, you never know what you can do until you have to.
Yes, exactly.
And I said it a little different still to my sons. I said, you know, you don't even have to get out of bed to die. As long as you're up, do something. And those boys and I have been figuring things out and getting things done ever since.
Well, you know, that stems from what your dad did there.
It does.
To let you make the gravy and do your own thing.
Yeah.
And I think that somewhere in the back of your mind, when you coach the boys and doing some food prep themselves, you know.
Yeah.
Might be scary, but you try it. If you make an error, we're all still alive the next day, hopefully.
Yeah.
Although
there
you could make some errors where that's not the case.
Right.
But I just think it's marvelous to tell stories anytime. And I just think it's great to tell stories about the holidays because they're always woven through and through with family. Family. And the endearing memories we all have of growing up.
Indeed.
And when we look back, most of us have so much to be thankful for because you know there are families where that's not possible and where it's very difficult, especially in urban areas, you know, where you're quite isolated in an apartment. You don't know your neighbors necessarily. There are so many things about life in the Midwest or in the farm or in a small community, if you will, that really remind you that your family is an extended one. It's a community. You know everybody. And if someone you know is in the hospital or has lost a loved one, my mother showed up with a covered dish.
A covered dish.
A covered dish.
Yes, the famous or infamous covered dish. Yeah,
that's right. You know, finally, when my parents died, I was the recipient of the covered dish. And so things go round and round. And
indeed.
Reciprocation happens, and that sense of community echoes through the current time, too. And I think that those things, food is often such a surrogate for showing that you love somebody, you care, you're sharing their tragedy, their loss, their crisis, whatever it might be. And so I remember when my dad died, a woman from the church showed up with all these soft drinks, a whole case of soft drinks. I thought that was really thoughtful, since I'm a Coke fanatic.
Janet Kloss, whose financial support was essential in getting KHOI on the air in 2012, and who has been co-host for Community Bookshelf since it started that year. The newly equipped broadcast studio was dedicated to her, suitable because recordings for Community Bookshelf have been made there. The second honoree was Paul Nelson, our station engineer, whose knowledge was instrumental in buying our basic transmission equipment, installing our transmission house, and troubleshooting crises at our broadcast tower. He also designed the layout for our main broadcast studio and selected suitable broadcast equipment.
And certainly KHOI is a community, as Susan mentioned, so many people helping out in so many ways, and there's always new people. There's a lot of older folks down here like me, and then they're, every time I walk in here, there's somebody new. And so it regenerates itself, and the community is a community that's growing, and I'm very thankful for KHOI, very thankful for Dan and Pat, who came in today and talked about all these great stories about family life, Thanksgiving, and really all the things we value and are thankful for at this time of the year. So thanks, Pat and Dan, for coming in. We're going to have you back. You know, you're.
Well, that'll be fun.
There's storytelling for every season, you know.
Yes.
Okay.
We'll end with a song that probably speaks for someone we all know or wish we did. It's a Johnny Cash song called Thanksgiving Prayer.
We've come to the time in the season when family and friends gather near to offer a prayer of thanksgiving for blessings we've known through the years, to join hands and thank the Creator now when Thanksgiving is due. This year when I count my blessings, I'm thanking the Lord He made you. This year when I count my blessings, I'm thanking the Lord He made you. I'm grateful for the laughter of children, the sun and the wind and the rain, the color of blue in your sweet eyes, the sight of a highball and train, the moonrise over a prairie, and oh love that you've made new. And this year when I count my blessings, I'm thanking the Lord He made you. This year when I count my blessings, I'm thanking the Lord He made you. And when the time comes to be going, it won't be in sorrow and tears. I'll kiss you goodbye and I'll go on the way, grateful for all of the years. I thank for all that you gave me, for teaching me what love can do. And Thanksgiving Day for the rest of my life, I'm thanking the Lord He made you. And Thanksgiving Day for the rest of my life, I'm thanking the Lord He made you.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I have been your host, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Thank you for listening. Earlier in the show, we heard from Pat Coffey, Dan Bagley. We want to remind you that Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI Radio at 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can hear us online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was All That Meat and No Potatoes, sung by Louis Armstrong and Thelma Middleton. The hip-hop Thanksgiving song, Greens, Beans, Potatoes, Tomatoes, sung by Pastor Shirley Caesar. And Thanksgiving Prayer by Johnny Cash. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your generosity. And we'll see you again on the radio.